Welcome to the Podcast Maneuver, the officially unofficial podcast for Star Trek Picard on Paramount Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about the feedback for the rest of the season, the whole season. I don't know, did people write in generally, or was it all about this finale?
It was about a bunch of different stuff. It was letting us know about upcoming Trek events. It was people telling us not to give up on Star Trek because Strange New Worlds. It was...
I can't not know about the Star Trek cruise because I get emails for it constantly, years
in
advance.
Wait, there's a Star Trek cruise?
They're booking for the 20... They're booking for the date that the Enterprise is launched from Stardock already. They've announced guests. It's crazy.
Is it a 7-year voyage?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a 7-year cruise. Like so Gilligan's Island.
I had no. So I guess I got to get on this mailing list because I had no idea that there is a Star Trek cruise.
Wow. Yeah. It's all I know about Star Trek fandom is the cruise now.
I want to show up in Jean-Luc's shiny silver holographic bikini boy briefs and his asymmetrical gauzy robe that he wore to Ryza. I'm just gonna live in that. Hopefully I can punch a Ferengi. If I could romance an intergalactic archaeologist, Indiana Jones smuggler, swindler, that would be a bonus. Have to clear that with Cecily. I might need the time of the Enterprise launching to make all this work out. Okay. I mean that actually sounds pretty cool. Although, you know, I don't know. What's a cruise full of Star Trek people? I've been to a few Star Trek conventions. Hey, they're my people. I enjoy my time among them. But 7 days and seven nights, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure it's a good nerdy time if you're into it, but I'm just not into cruises.
I've only been on one. It was a good time. I imagine if Star Trek marathons would only improve the, but that's the thing. It's like, I feel like any type of cruise, and I've seen this like the Joko cruises, Jonathan, was it Colton? Is that his name? Some of the other stuff. It's like, it seems like they're dying, like a board game cruise. Like, well, why don't you just save a couple grand and just play board games on land? You know?
Yeah.
They're diametrically opposing things. I don't know. We got feedback. We got our hailing frequencies are open. We're about to close them. We're about to go dark until the next season. But we do have a quite a robust feedback here. Leading off, Picard@baldmove.com is Dennis. So this is not so much feedback, but a heads up. With Star Trek the Motion Picture being re-released in 4K, there's a limited engagement on the big screen if you want to watch it in all its glory. Screenings are in a couple of weeks in the later half of May, I think.
Yeah, I saw
checked this out. Mm-hmm. We have several screenings close to us, not in our preferred theater, but like, you know, the Milford AMC is not too far away. The one at the Levy, not too bad. And it is in the latter half of May.
This is the version that has the updated graphics and improved visuals.
Supposedly, yeah, this is the 4K re-release.
I was watching Trek Lad over on YouTube. He's got a review of this thing, and I'm sure it's from like a 4K Blu-ray or something like that. But apparently, I don't know. He wasn't totally enamored with the graphical updates. It certainly looks better from like a resolution standpoint and a clarity standpoint, but they've like gone and did what they did to like TNG, right? When they remastered that and put in like new visual effects.
Hold on. They did the old series. They actually did a TNG too.
TNG. Yeah,
I know they did. For a fact, they did the old series. I thought that stuff looked amazing.
Maybe I'm thinking of the old series, but yeah, they've done the same thing here. They've like not just remastered the visuals, but like changed visual effects to make them flashier.
Boy, I don't know about that because like we just watched this like 2 years ago, and I was kind of gobsmacked by how well the model work like held up.
Yeah, and that's not
they
a movie you want a ton of like.
Yeah,
lens flares and shit going on, right? You just want it to be what it is, and
They added those stupid pyrotechnic ring explosions, everything, instead of the Klingon ship being digitized, it blows up like a giant basketball ring.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious. I kind of want to check it out.
Yeah, it's in Cincinnati. It's the weekend of May 20th weekend. That sucks. Although there's an engagement on Monday and Wednesday, because I said that's the weekend I'm doing my big backyard paver project. So, but there is showings on Monday and Wednesday too. So yeah, check that out. I think it's done through that Fathom. Yeah, one of those Fathom events. So if you have a theater that hosts Fathom events, you got a very good chance of seeing Star Trek the Motion Picture, which is essentially a supersized Star Trek episode. It's really good. I think it holds up, especially if you've been hungering for some more thoughtful Trek.
Yeah.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Moving on to Nathan, we got some context about Maurice Picard. My grandfather's name and pronunciation matches Maurice Picard, so I wanted to provide you the context here. My grandfather's born in rural Arkansas in the early 1900s, the Bible-thumping Baptist who immigrated from England to America in the early 1800s. The English version of Maurice is pronounced like Morris Chestnut's name. It was news to me, but apparently Maurice is originated as a French name. I did know that, which is why it's Maurice. But its popularity is due to Mauritius, Saint Maurice, who was an Egyptian military leader who headed the legendary Theban Legion of Rome in the 3rd century. Mauritius in origin means one from Mauritania, Mauritania, i.e. the Moor. It's stretched from present-day Algeria westwards to the Atlantic, included land on each side of the Strait of Gibraltar. Based on the pronunciation guide, Maurice Picard uses the English favored pronunciation of the name Maurice, a.k.a. Morris. Long story short, Maurice Picard is one of the most appropriate names for Jean-Luc Picard's father, especially considering Patrick Stewart's English accent, even if it seems weird to us, the viewers, who are subjected to 10 episodes of poorly written fan fiction. I mean, it does match the whole... And that's one of my favorite things about this season, is they did some fun retconning of why you have this very distinguished English person with his very, very, you know, but wearing his Frenchness on his sleeve like a badge of, you know, I don't know, badge of baguettes, like a baguette of courage.
Sure.
So thanks, I appreciate it, because like, yeah, is this a Maurice Picard is his name. Derek O, usually great shows don't land the plane. This show, it's landed itself with a damaged warp core and compromised bridge. The ending shows how a strong end game can get derailed by either lazy or unfocused execution of little things. I digress. The ending took it from a waste of time into the neutral zone, which I guess is pun intended. I think Derek's of the opinion that we had a strong start and, like we were talking about, surprisingly strong ending, but like... this could have been, I feel like this could have been a 3-episode show. Yeah. The first one, a romp. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I don't want
to
cut you off.
I was going to say, I think we had someone write in with email to that effect. Like, this could have been a 2-parter. And I kind of think they're right. Yeah.
A 2-parter might have been a stretch because I liked almost everything in the first part and quite a bit of the second. But and a 3rd episode for just like a zany romp through 21st century America, like Star Trek IV. I thought that would be a lot of fun. And the stuff they did with Q, again, I almost think it works because they didn't try to explain it. It's just like for some, you know, ineffable reason, Q is dying and he's scared and he wants someone who's been on a big part of his journey, or at least, you know, I guess whatever that means to Eternal Q, to be with him when he and to give him one last parting gift. Like, that through line really fucking works. Don't know why they buried it under 10 different layers of crazy plot.
Because they had to. They have 10 episodes they gotta fill. What else are you going to do? Nobody else's story is as interesting to us.
But they didn't. Like, well, this could have been a 10-episode season where, like, that's the core. That's like, there's a 3 or 4episode run there that's the core. But you could have, you know, I don't know. I would have liked to have seen Rios going around in Stargazer a little bit more. Have a couple episodes of Picard being the admiral of Starfleet and kind of, like, going on a training thing that could have devolved into it. I don't know. Like, yeah, just because it would work as a 3-episode arc doesn't mean that the writer's room just takes the rest of the season off. Just keep doing, like the one guy said last week, like the way they do on the Clone Wars and Rebels and things, where they have, you know, little mini arcs each season. I think that would have worked, but oh well. The ship has sailed. James B., even though I enjoy listening to you guys shit on the dumb stuff in Picard week after week, I have still enjoyed the season. Here are the things that irritated me, though. One, by far the most egregious omission is the lack of any attempt by the writers to account for the episode Time Zero. I kept waiting for some acknowledgement by the end of the season, but it never came. Young Guinan didn't recognize Picard when he first showed up in 2024 10 forward, even though she'd met him 125 years earlier in San Francisco. That encounter, complete with Mark Twain, wouldn't have been easily forgotten. Time Zero isn't some horrible, forgotten episode from TNG Season 1. They make a big deal of Time Zero about how it was the first time Picard and Guinan met. Even on the theory that Q or Picard's crew had already set in motion the alternate timeline by the time Picard walked into 2024 10 forward, maybe because Q had already convinced Rene to quit the Europa mission by then, isn't one of Guinan's big things her awareness of alternate timelines, especially when a timeline isn't what it's supposed to be? Yeah, I recognize what I think the show people have said, and I've only seen this in like those retrospective interviews with Leslie Crusher, where they're like, oh, well, it's the ordered timeline, but it really doesn't make sense that Guinan, with her temporal awareness, had no idea who Jean-Luc Picard was until he named his name, and then she started throwing up or whatever fucking space sickness she got.
And I don't know. I was under the impression that the alternate timeline began after the events of most of this season, right? Like, the branching happens, but everything happened the same way before it.
Well, see, that's why I buy that if you stop Renee and you end up in the despotic hell space that is the 24th Century Federation, then that Picard is not
grows up
not
to be,
going gallivanting, yeah, exploring around the galaxy, never loses Data his head in a cave, certainly doesn't travel back in time to San Francisco to rescue him, because he'd just be a fucking robot who gives a shit, right? Mm-hmm. Which yeah, implies that they could have gone to that cave in San Francisco and gotten Data's head out of storage and done something cool with that.
Sure. But back to the future.
The thing
scenario.
Is, what I can't quite, because like these people have seen Star Trek, they know quite a bit about the deep lore. It's so weird that they would just jettison a really important episode between Guinan and Picard and not really address it at all. Like, you know, like, I mean, not even in their, you know, half ass, like one sentence. Oh, your brother's studying at college. Don't worry about him kind of way. I can't figure it out. Which is a whole other plot of another hard to forget to the Next Generation episode. James continues, yesterday's Enterprise. I feel like, and that's the one where the Enterprise C comes through a wormhole and it was supposed to defend the Klingon outpost against the Romulans, but couldn't. So that led to war between the Federation and Klingons and a very militarized Federation. Natasha Yar is still alive, and Shooter McGavin goes back with Tasha to save the Klingons or some shit like that. You all remember. I feel like old Guinan could have at least said something during that last conversation, like, oh yeah, when you guys restored the timeline and suddenly remembered that I'd already met you with Mark Twain in San Francisco, but the writers just left us hanging. When old Picard hid the skeleton key behind the loose stone so young Picard could find it 300 years later, did that change the timeline so his dad couldn't lock the mom inside the door because he wouldn't have been able to find the key where old Picard had hid it?
No, I think it set in motion the events as we saw them, right? From his childhood? Like, because he does let his mom out of that room, and he blames himself for letting her out and then her killing herself and all that. So,
well, he's saying his dad couldn't lock him because he couldn't find the key, but I'm like, you can have keys remade, and also, like, that's a pretty conspicuous hiding place, you know, like, it's not hidden in the way that, like, the fleur-de-lis World War II passages were hidden. It's just like, you know, I imagine if dad's like, oh, here's a door, I wonder how you lock it. Oh, here's an obvious fake brick. You know, like, that one doesn't bother me as much as the guidance stuff for sure. Finally, you guys talked a lot about the eugenics wars, but isn't Earth also supposed to be ravaged by a nuclear World War III that makes nation states collapse decades before the events of the First Contact movie, which happened around 2060? Mm-hmm. Seems like the eugenics wars have been delayed by several decades from the canon. Khan and his band of augments have been created by Soon and grow into adulthood before the wars can begin, apparently. And I actually thought that happened like 1997 in the old series timeline.
Probably.
It was like, yeah, or
some crazy future date, 1997. So,
yeah. What's the first? Yeah, there's no fucking way we'll still not have blown ourselves away by then, right? Roddenberry snorts another rail of coke. Also, Strange New Worlds episode 1 just established that the U.S. has a second civil war at some point, so Rios has a lot of bad stuff coming his way in the 21st century. Yeah.
That's kind of what I was on about, yeah, at the end of last episode, where they say what his future is, and it couldn't possibly be unless, like, his future ended a week after they left.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's wild that they put that kind of Pollyanna, you know, oh, they lived, they're mariposas, they're the butterflies that are flapping all through history, which, number one, mildly horrifying. Mm-hmm. What the fuck did that do to our good? Is that why Star Trek sucks now? Yes. Rios flapped his butterfly wings, and now the Starfleet's is kind of fashy, you know, kind of wanting to enslave androids You know, not full throated, not like, you know, Lord Battlefleet Admiral Commander Picard cutting people's heads off in stadiums bad, but bad compared to what we know.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah. Sean says, I've been listening to you for over a decade. I absolutely love your content. My wife probably knows your voices better than my own by now. This is Jeez. Incredibly high praise. Thank you, Sean. I just watched this new Star Trek after having watched, so he's talking about Strange New Worlds, after having watched Picard and listened to your podcast, I agree Discovery of Picard is not what Star Trek was or should be. This first episode of Strange New Worlds is absolutely what Star Trek was in the original and the Next Generation. I would love it if you would give it a look and podcast about it.
I will definitely give it a look. I can't guarantee a podcast, but...
They're out here saying that Strange New Worlds is good Star Trek again. It has a 98% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes. What the fuck? I was let's settle down. I will also remind everybody that the first couple episodes of Star Trek Disco was not bad. I thought it was pretty, you know, the Klingons are funny looking. Not sure why they did that, but it's pretty good. First episode or two of the first season of Picard, I liked, and I was over the moon about the first two episodes of this season of Picard. Mm-hmm. So I want to hear more, but I'm getting Paramount Plus to watch The Offer anyway, so fuck it. I'm definitely going to watch an episode or two of this, and if it hooks me, why not? I again, full podcast, I don't know, but if you didn't know, we have a premium podcast called Off the Clock. Might be worth $5 a month during the reign of Star Trek, Strange New Worlds, to check that out. But yeah, thanks for the recommendation, Sean, and again, incredibly high praise. David C., as for the last episode of Picard, could the CGI be any worse on this show? It was especially bad with Borg Queen Jurati. It looks like they CGI'd Allison Pill's face into someone else's body. What was going on at the back of her head? It looked like an alien queen.
It's H.R. Giger RoboCop. Giger, I don't know how you say it. Yeah, H.R. Giger's version of RoboCop with Jurati's face pasted on it.
It looks like they took an Adobe Photoshop bucket and selected Allison Pale's skin tone and alien queen head and just drug it along her forehead and just smoothly gradient flesh to inhumanity.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the Borg queen, like, I don't know. That's not how the Borg work, right? The Borg queen has flesh and then it terminates into an exosuit and there's hoses and stuff. Yeah. There's no smooth gradients of intestine to fucking HVAC ducting. I don't know. It looked bad.
There were other shots that looked equally bad. I talked about them. It's not good.
I was expecting to be put off. I wasn't expecting to be put off for that just looks stupid reasons. I do love Star Trek and I will watch season 3 of Picard, but the series is a mess. What do you want to see happen in season 3? Personally, I want to see Captain Seven and Captain Worf.
Okay. I could see that. What I really want to see is I want the whole crew back together for at least one scene. You can't bring all these characters back and not have them in the same room talking to each other for at least a scene.
COVID be damned.
Yeah.
Patrick Stewart's lived a long life. If he dies during a TNG reunion, that's a risk I'm willing to take.
Dies doing what he loves, right?
Yeah. No, they have to. They have to get them all back together.
Yeah.
I will say I'm a little put off by this last minute Laris romance because I thought it would be kind of sweet to keep the will they won't they between Crusher and Picard going, and they're I think either Picard is going to decide late in his life that he's gotten all of his emotional blockage and he's ready to sow them wild cybernetic oats, or he's going to two-time Laris if he's even flirt. I don't know how I feel about that. Is Laris going to just die? Oh my god.
Yeah,
because they mentioned these
transport
are all anthologies
accident.
she's got
gonna,
fucking
yeah she's gonna turn into a screaming pig person. Yep. On the transporter pad.
They accidentally beamed her inside out, and it's the first time it's happened since the motion picture, and it's a damn shame, but it's going to completely pave the way. And he's going to have that Romulan philosophy. Is like, well, she's dead, so
yeah,
going to honor that love by rolling on to the next one. I don't know. Captain Worf. I is that good enough? Like, the Worf's a captain like 30 years after TNG. I feel like maybe he needs to be like an ambassador. He needs to be up. He needs to be up and up and up in places.
Jesus, Admiral Worf. I can't see him as an ambassador. I can't even really see him as an admiral. I feel like captain's where he belongs. I don't know. I mean, I like Worf, but I don't know that he was cut from the admiral cloth, let's say.
What if what if Worf has become High Chancellor of the Klingon Empire?
Oh, yeah.
He's sitting on that throne with that sweet-ass leather trench coat with all the fucking medals all over him.
And shit, yeah. How do you get him back on the ship, though, if that's the case? Because I want to see him like
his Chadich. His Chadich calls and he's not gonna answer. Fuck no, he's gonna come running.
We'll see. Yeah, that would be a cool place for him to be.
It's almost unbelievable, but also I think it. I mean, the politics of it makes sense. Like if the Klingons and the Federation grow ever closer together as staunch allies, which I think they did. The Dominion War kind of like. Help that along. Someone who is a full Klingon. It's not like he's like half Klingon, so that would like skeeve out the conservative Klingons. He's full Klingon, a Klingon's Klingon. Like that's one of the points they made in Star Trek season 3 is that like a lot of the Klingons at that point have been kind of talk and have lost like the true meaning of honor and glory, and Worf is bringing it back. That served in the Federation, or maybe, you know, he did serve in the Klingon Empire distinction. He's kind of like, you know, that has a crossover appeal among Klingon voters. I don't fucking know how it doesn't seem like it's a strictly democratic process. But yeah, no, I would like to see Worf doing big things. We already know about we kind of know about Riker and Deanna. They're cooking rabbit pizzas, alien rabbit pizzas. They're happily married.
I want to see Geordi designing entire starships. That's what I want.
Geordi should be like the Leah Brahms of this era.
That's exactly what I'm thinking.
There should be a LaForge class warp core in the latest starship that they're mentioning. Yeah.
9.9, no problem.
Yeah. Who are we missing? I think that's it, right? Like, that's the bridge crew.
I mean, Beverly, we didn't really say like where she'd be.
They already made her chief medical officer of this. Like, she's like the Surgeon General of the Federation.
We see a potential future for her, right, as Captain Beverly Crusher in All Good Things.
Oh, I thought she was like literally the Surgeon General of Starfleet. Was she not?
Oh, was she? I thought she was captaining the Enterprise there. But I could be right. Wrong.
She had like a medical ship. Maybe she was the flag off. I don't know.
Yeah, one of the medical ships, maybe.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. I do hope they're a little flirty, though. That's my favorite. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite parts of Star Trek: The Next Generation is seeing if Picard and the Crusher are going to get it on, or if he's going to keep his defense going against her.
Do you think Wesley will be back?
I hope not. I think, especially now that they've, you know, reaffirmed him to being a traveler, and they got bigger fish to fry. Although he did come back for Deanne, I wouldn't be mad. I wouldn't be mad if he came back.
Okay.
Let's move on to Nick from Sydney. Since the pandemic, I've been using TV and movies as an escape from the shit show going on all around me, and I try to be positive, but the show has broken me. Same, brother. Same. I was ranting at the screen. The good, Will Wheaton cameo. The bad, everything else. The Rene Picard plotline, you can just walk into NASA with someone else's ID. What's the point of quarantine if Dr. Soon can walk up and touch you in your face? Oh, that was the best one-line explanation. Well, prior to 24 hours before the launch, they dropped quarantine procedures. Mm. Yeah, because that's when you want your mission commander to get strep throat or, you know, come down with the bubonic plague that you expose to cosmic radiation. Yeah, that's what the fuck. The plot was over in 20 minutes. I'm still not sure what the hell that was all about. How did Cora, is that her name? The Soon's daughter, Khan's grandmother.
Not Soji. I have no idea what her name
not
is.
Not Soji. How did not Soji get a class? Cause he pronounced a core K or spelled a K O R E, but I don't think it was Cora. It was Cora. Hmm. Maybe Corey. How did she get a laptop? She walked away from Dr. Soon's house with just the clothes on her back. How? She stole one from the Los Angeles library system. It's the only thing I could think of.
Yep.
How is she a traveler?
Will Wheaton made her one. I don't know.
That's right. That's right. Why are there so many Talons? Q says something about timelines and there's a hand wave. I still don't fucking know. Even if she's the great, great, great ancestor. Yeah, that's stupid. They want to go back to the future thanks to Q. That hug between Q and Picard is one of the worst things I've seen on TV, let alone Star Trek. Picard what? Absolutely hates Q. He's responsible for the deaths of 18 members of the Enterprise D's crew back way back when, plus lots of other mischief. Picard should not forgive him. What the fuck?
Hmm.
I mean, it's a good point. Q has killed many, many Star Federation personnel. Like, he's every death incurred by the Borg is indirectly at his feet.
Sure.
Yeah. On the other hand, Picard's old, you know? Yeah, he's got a few deaths on his hands. Turns out,
yeah,
they're both war criminals.
It's a dying man. I don't know. I was fine with it.
Where is Rios? Yes, that's correct. He's just gone. Plus, his reason for staying in the now, apart from the hot doctor, which I can't agree with, is that he lived alone on a spaceship with five holograms. Not that he was Starfleet captain. We didn't talk about that, but like his whole like. I was lost and I didn't have a family and a son of a bitch. You were the captain of a starship. You just got your career back. Like that was your sad sack shit from the Federation fucking with you, man.
Yeah.
And like low key pinning the death of his starship and his captain on him, blaming him on that. Like,
yeah, I mean, captain of the Stargazer is no small feat.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be like now if I like went back in time and wanted to stay there and I cited, well, you know, I lost all my friends and family when I left that religion. That was 15 years ago. Things right. have gone on, you know. Uh-huh. still, I'd probably stay in the past, honestly. I'd have to look and see what's going on around me. But, you know, it might be a trade up. You never know. Finally, the Borg have been completely ruined as an enemy. They now want to be friends. I can see them saving the galaxy so they can assimilate more races, but being a guardian of the gate? No, thank you. This one bothered me less because, in my mind, the Borg have been destroyed as an enemy that you can take seriously long, long before. And this is like one of the last interesting things you could do with them. Just fuck it. Right. Bring them into the fold, you know?
Yeah, I think like Voyager did a lot of damage to the Borg, and some good things for the Borg. Know about it, but also, yeah, I don't have a problem with this. There will always be a different big bad. I think the Borg, as conceived and pictured early on in The Next Generation, were way cooler than the stuff that we got after the fact. I love conceptually the idea of the Borg, but I don't really like everything they did with him. But I don't know. This is as good as anything else, any other way to leave them. So,
yeah, and that's the thing about powerful villains is like they have to be overcome or they have to turn good eventually, because otherwise they're just going to beat the hero's ass eventually, you know?
Yeah.
Like Megatron is pretty cool until for the 16th time he's like, God damn it, Starscream, you fucked me again. Ah, you know, like it's like, well, then maybe you should fire Starscream. He's your employee. You know, like management can only blame employees a time or two, and then it starts becoming a management problem, Megatron.
Yeah. The Romulans are kind of that now. Like, when are they going to make the Romulans the good guys, I guess? Like, when will they have had enough with the Romulans being the bad guys? Because that's gone on for a long time.
The universe is a big, or the galaxy especially is a big place. Like, Federation largely just plays around in the Alpha Quadrant. There's four other quadrants, believe it or not. It would be, you know, like if you want to retire. The thing is, if you want to retire a major villain like the Romulans, you need another one kind of in the wings because right. Star Trek does need conflict. Mm-hmm. Even those Ian Banks books that everyone's, you know, the utopian books about the culture. If it's just all about the culture, it'd be boring as fuck because they've got all their problems solved. It's like, how does the culture deal with other, you know, autonomous beings that might not be as enlightened as them? Like that's the whole thing mm-hmm. that makes the thing work. So if you want to get rid of the Romulans as our favorite backdoor spies, you got to come up with something new, and the Borg ain't it.
Nope.
Stay positive and trek on. Well, I'm going to try to see if Strange New Things brings it back around for us. Matt says, Oh, we had this question about LeVar Burton and whether he would consider audiobooks actually reading. Don't worry, Jim. You can still get in good with LeVar because he's narrated at least 16 audiobooks, including Carl Sagan's Cosmos and the King James Bible. What range? Okay.
Holy shit, how long did that take? That's 1,000 paper thin lizard skin pages, man.
You know, we think of the Bible as a giant tome, and it is. As someone has read through it a couple times, it's a bit of a slog in places. But like Game of Thrones, I think Dance of Dragons is actually longer. And if all the books
is it really?
Combined, oh yeah, like and if you talk about like the Song of Ice and Fire in total, it's like not even close. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, the whole series, obviously, but.
I'm pretty sure all of Lord of the Rings is longer than the Bible, too. So
I want to know if you printed these on if you printed those books on the same type of paper that you print the Bible on.
Mm-hmm.
I bet they would be
the
Gideon smaller than
Bible
the Bible
pages.
The Bible is a very big book but it looks small because it's printed on just the thinnest possible paper.
Sure. And a lot of times, like you see, those Bibles that they just have like Psalms, Proverbs, and the New Gospel. They dispense with most of the Old Testament.
Right. That's the other thing. You want to read the Lord of the Rings, you want to read Game of Thrones, whatever. Those books, they're entertaining consistently. You go to the Bible, you're going to be slogging through some boring stuff.
That's true.
Fully half the Bible is just names of people.
Yeah. There's some good. I mean, like I said, I think there's a lot of the early goings that's essentially like Game of Thrones kind of level of like plot and intrigue. But yeah, you get to like Numbers and it's just like,
yeah.
And the sons of Nephilim were
Solomon.
And he had this sons and they had that sons. And yeah, it's mm-hmm. a lot of genealogy. Jake, so we're still good. We're all still good with LaForge. That's awesome. J-Cube says, first, thank you for pointing out the writers did the bare minimum to address Picard's older brother. I blame my eyes glazing over during those flashbacks. I would like to acknowledge the good from the finale. I thought it was nice to see Wesley be given a moment, and Picard and Q's scene near the end was very nice. The finale was admittedly much better than the previous 7 episodes, but even so, a good 75% of the episode didn't work for me. I think that's a fair percentage. I think that's about what I would peg it to. Mm-hmm. Is that how they recruit travelers now? Remember how Wesley was recruited over multiple seasons before he was able to fully embrace becoming a traveler and actually demonstrating aptitude previously to being one? Wesley is just YOLOs this recruitment. Yeah. What? I mean, I like Will coming back. I feel like he recruited the wrong person. Who could have recruited that would have been better? I guess 7, but then that spoils 7 would have been a good candidate for a traveler, you know, with her Borg experience and, you know, but then that spoils the whole half-ass Rafi romance. They want
Elnor. Get Elnor out of here. Just take him away to be a traveler.
Elmore's weird enough that I could see him becoming a traveler, but I don't think they've established that. Yeah, I don't know, man, because like I agree. I thought that came out of kind of nowhere. And I guess she's not really recruited to be a traveler. She's a watcher, which is it seems like quite a bit step down in power from an actual traveler.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I don't know. I thought that was weird, but I did like to see Wesley. So I'm overriding that objection. They also should have just ended the season with the Picard Q scene, because immediately following that, the show pulled an Amber Heard and shat the bed. Full Jurati Borg Queen was nightmare fuel. I think Aaron compared to a Cabbage Patch Kid, but subconsciously I heard Garbage Pail Kid. I meant to say Garbage Pail. So if I said Cabbage Patch, I meant to say a Garbage Pail version of Darth Vader. So I'm glad you caught the vibe I was putting down if my mush mouth fucked up the joke. I also feel like they just used a dithered eraser tool in Photoshop. Well, we're just cribbing from the same notes here, J-Cubed. I just feel like they used eraser tool in Photoshop to paste her head into the Borg Queen's body is just awful, and the Rio story sounds like bad fan fiction. Yeah, I could nitpick the rest of the episode as soon and Renee, but you guys did a good job of that. Like you, I'm in for the third season because of the returning TNG cast, and Jim's pitch of a micro anthology season was pretty brilliant. Let's hope they actually listen to fan feedback this time around. They're not going to.
Nope, they've said
defiantly proud of the fact that they don't take notes. So that's awesome for them. I'm happy for them for that. Josh H says Picard is bad fan fiction written by amateurs. Fan fiction usually has a cool idea for a start, maybe a cool idea for ending, but weak and convoluted in the middle with no idea how to connect the beginning and ending. That's pretty right on.
Technically, you're wrong. These people are being paid to do what they're doing. So they are professionals, even if they are writing bad fan fiction.
They paid that 50 Shades lady serious money to write Twilight fan fiction.
That day she became a professional. I hate to say it, but she is a professional writer.
She went pro. Yeah, you're right. You're right. So I have this straight. The end of Picard season one was to turn back some monstrous race of synthetics hell-bent on destroying organic life in the universe by collapsing some portal thing. The end of Picard season two is to turn back some mysterious threat hell-bent on destroying the universe by collapsing some portal thing. Ooh, they could have probably made something of that if they thought for a minute or two on it.
Star Trek is like 80% of the climax of Star Trek is collapsing some portal thing. Like, pick any random episode and they're always trying to collapse some portal thing.
There's a stellar mass, a subspace distortion, a quantum filament, a rogue transwarp wave. Yep. Yeah, there's some weird subspace shit happening and they got to stop it. None of these endings were used as a story engine. It's just a thing that happens. To quote Wednesday Adams, your work is puerile and under-dramatized. You lack any sense of structure, character, and Aristotelian unities. I mean, Wednesday Adams, killing him there. Moving on to Gus. I may be more susceptible than most to experiencing an emotional catharsis, even when it's unearned. An analogy could perhaps be made between the writing on Picard and the experience of a heroin user. Yep. It certainly has some short-term enjoyment, but each time the impact lessens and I feel cheap because of it. My love of Trek predates the Next Generation. Trust me, I'm catching all the old series and the TNG references in the show. It seems that this is the only redeeming quality. I cannot help but shed a tear when I hear First Contact music enter the soundtrack any more than I can at Q's final embrace. And yet, it seems painfully obvious to me that one of the first things the writers conceived of was that ending, with no idea how to convincingly get there. Did the Double D's write this nonsense? I won't itemize every instance of their failed show. Still waiting to see an original creative work from these guys. What happened to their $500 million Netflix deal?
They're still working on it. I have no idea.
That's crazy. That is crazy to me. What's happened to these guys after season 8 of Game of Thrones? It's wild. I won't itemize every instance of the failed shots, but at the end, when the Excelsior was fucking up their shield with whatever, leading to the fleet admiral to contact the ship's captain. Correction. The cadet Elnor. Mm-hmm. Abandon any bit of nuance that I had hoped would still exist by now, but obviously it left a long time ago. There's so many things that we didn't talk about that's like ridiculous in the margins, because when has that ever happened where a captain has talked to another Starfleet and the ops console picks up? Can I help you? Yeah, get your shields tuned, boy. Like, what?
Right.
Goodbye to season 2 and good riddance. Like Q, I'll simply pick the timeline I prefer and make that my personal canon for the Star Trek universe. It's the only way to go. There's a lot of them out there. Choose the one that works best for you. Craig T. So episode 2 comes in to a close, and once again I'm left with just a lot of frustration of what could have been. Good characters and situations in both seasons that I feel have been squandered and a false need to fit into a box that Star Trek just doesn't fit into. Action for action's sake, at times trying to be too clever, things you guys have been pointing out for a while now. There's a version of both stories, especially the one in season 2, that I feel would have worked very well had they kept it a bit simpler and more character-driven, and that action flows from that would be more interesting. Yeah, I mean, lame Star Trek The Next Generation action is still better than the action on this show, even though, I mean, the fight scenes in the average Star Trek show are ridiculous. It's like they know how to do is the Federation double hammer fist chop thing.
Yeah.
Their guns look like dustbusters. It's just a shit show, right? But, you know, it means something.
I always felt it had a purpose.
Yeah, when Riker says, "Mr. Worf, prepare to fire," shit, man, Picard's on that Borg ship. You know, it's there. Mm-hmm. There was some stakes, and they took their time to get there. I would like to say, though, that they did manage to pull at my heartstrings with Picard and Q's last encounter, especially the hug, and this is the type of interactions we've been dying to see throughout the season. Would it not have been better to have Q be Q throughout and then have had that revelation at the end that he is dying and wanting to give Picard one last season? That would have been wonderful. I don't know, because I feel like then the argument would be, well, that literally came out of nowhere. Like, what is Q? Like, they had to establish something being wrong with Q, and I don't think they did a good job with that.
Yeah, they established it, but I never felt like I understood why any of it was happening.
Yeah, like Picard's like, "You're not well, Q," but why isn't he well? Because, or why isn't he well? Because like I said, we always talked about it. It's like, well, is he talking in circles even more than usual for Q? Is a really subtle thing. It's not like he looked, I mean, he looked visibly older, but that's because he transformed to match Picard. Mm-hmm. His loss of power was interesting. They would have been interesting if like they had showed subtly him losing control of his power, or things not going exactly to plan, or him having to do things like the VR stuff because he doesn't have the juice anymore to do anything more than that. And we found out along the way that he's sick. But it's wild that in the first episode, Picard's just like, "You're not well."
Yeah.
So, yeah. It was also nice to see Wesley again. I've always thought he was unfairly treated in fandom. Agreed. It was shameful the way the writers of that shitty-ass, busted-up season one and season two writer room treated this boy. This young man who had a fine career in Hollywood up to that point, done some stellar work. Stand By Me. Are you kidding me?
Sure.
Will Wheaton's awesome in that. And they gave him shitty lines, made him say it, and then said Wesley sucks. Had the temerity to do that. It's not cool. I'm glad.
Blame the costume department as well.
They didn't do my man Wesley very, very, like, yeah, those sweaters were not great. The burlap, the finest burlap woven sweaters and corduroy pants, just Here's hoping one last time the season three can redeem the show. I would abandon all hope. I would jettison that shit like a breached warp core and try to limp into the third season on impulse power alone. That's your best bet.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't expect season three to have an amazing, coherent story. What I expect of it is we'll get to see our old friends back on the screen. That's it. That's all I expect from season
three. What if the whole season is just moments like Wesley Crusher showing up out of nowhere and Q giving Picard a hug and, you know, like what if that? What if that? That would be pretty cool. Here's a nightmare scenario. It's just a shitty season of Picard. And the first episode is him sitting at 10 forward on Earth, a guy with everybody having to get together that gets immediately busted up so Picard can go on adventures with Elnor and Soji.
Ugh. Yeah.
And no Rios and no Allison Pale. So,
Allison Pale.
Pill. Allison Garbage Pale.
That's Freudian.
That's her new name. No, there's a pretty good chance that that's exactly what's going to happen. They load all the guest stars in the one episode, and it's just for fan service, and it's not Picard getting the old crew together and doing.
God, I mean, everybody's just going to turn on this show if
it's their last season.
Right?
Why the fuck would they care?
Because they'll turn on Star Trek as a whole. I don't know. Do you want to piss off every TNG fan? Because I feel like 90% of Star Trek fans at this point are TNG fans.
This is true, but I've found that a lot of TNG fans are apparently simple. They like the season of Star Trek because they have Picard in it. So I don't know. Arcade Shenanigans wrote in and said, "You referenced a Red Letter Media review. One thing they mentioned that I've seen in Star Trek and Star Wars fandom is it seems like the writing on these modern takes of classic shows have started to reach back and retroactively poison the experiences for longtime fans. I wanted to remind and equip the Bald Move community with the mental firewall that I use when watching stupid shit like this season of Picard." I want to pause here because that's something that Mike mentioned on the Red Letter Media review. is that Rich Evans, the other guy, said, well, you know, we always have the Next Generation. And Mike's like, mm-hmm. here's the bad part is now when I go back and watch the Next Generation, this stuff is in the back of my mind and it makes me actively like that show less.
No, that's a you problem, man. That is not a fandom problem.
Yeah, that's almost like, I almost feel like that's performative. But maybe not. Because like, even like I hate Star Trek at this point Star Wars 3 times worse than I hate Star Trek. And I can still watch Empire Strikes Back, and 5 minutes in, I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm locked in. This is still a banger. Luke's in the Wampa Cave. The AT-ATs are coming. We got Dagobah. We got Yoda looking like Yoda. I'm up for that. Like, that's an excellent movie. And I feel like we just did, like, on our Sci-Fi Sundays we did all of last year, we did 2 episodes of Star Trek each week. Next Generation, we got all the way up to close to the end of season 4 before Jeff Bezos cruelly pulled the rug out from underneath us and Paramount Plus took it for their archive. And I mean, yeah, season 1 and season 2 were silly, but season 3, there was a lot of those things were fucking good. A lot of season 4 stuff that was really excellent and worked. Hilarious, good character moments, exciting, thought-provoking. Like, I can't go along on that.
And crucially, never once did it cross my mind, oh, Star Trek Picard is out there and it ruins my fandom of these things. Never once did I think of Star Trek Picard while watching these things. So...
And if I imagine maybe because we didn't get to Time Zero, I think that's a season 4 finale. If we had of, I wondered. But like, I think it would be more of like, look how bad they fucked up their layup they had. It wouldn't be like, this is dumb retroactively. It'd be like they had this solid foundation to build something cool on and they just fucked it up.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he wants to give us, if you are one of those people like Mike Stoleska, I forget what the guy's last name is, Mike from Red Letter Media, that's memories of TNG and the old series have been poisoned by the strychnine that is Star Trek Picard. He's got a tool for you. Everyone's least favorite character inadvertently gifted to fandom with this temporal firewall. If you find yourself hating these modern takes on Picard, just remember, this isn't the Picard we watched for 7 seasons of TNG. This is JL. If a scene is tactically brilliant or morally superior, that's Picard. If it's nonsensical, it's JL. In my headcanon, JL is sort of like the doofus Jerry from Rick and Morty. And looking real hard for one more bright side, at least the Emoji Movie wasn't Sir Patrick Stewart's last acting gig.
Oh, God.
Because this is better than the Emoji Movie, which I haven't even seen. He was talking about the sausage party, and I'm like, well, that's stupid, but he was in the Emoji Movie? Oh, Patrick.
I wouldn't know, but yeah, that's terrible, if true.
Oh, Patrick. What would Ian McKellen say? I didn't hate this season of Picard, but I have to admit it was quite dumb at times. I thought the conclusion with Q is a nice moment. I like seeing Will Wheaton's Traveler instead of just Wheaton shilling for the show. That seems to be the universal through line. Most people, with I think the exception of J-Cubed up there, liked the old antagonist bearing the hatchet. The internet seems to be implying that seasons 2 and 3 of Picard were shot back to back. I'm having trouble thinking of a movie or television series that was shot back to back and was better for it in the end. Can you think of any? I mean, Lord of the Rings is the classic example.
The biggest one.
Yeah, so it can work, but like that's the thing. If you're holding out hope that Shaban and Kurtzman or whoever, I can't ever remember the guys at the top of this, are going to heed fan feedback, like flush it down the toilet, because you're going to have possibly editing and special effects that they can work with, but the stuff has already been written and largely shot as far as I can tell. So. Anyway, we'll keep in mind the JL versus Picard, Jean-Luc division if we need to when season 3 kicks around. So, hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms.
Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations, while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're getting towards the end of the mailbag here. Ian B says, Picard season two, deep sigh. That didn't go well and was off to such a strong start. Keep this in mind when you're sitting down to watch the upcoming week's episode of Strange New World. We all loved the first episode of this season.
Yeah.
There are many good things about the end. Mentions all the classic Will Wheaton. But even though Will Wheaton is great, it didn't make any sense. I did like how they tied Next Generation's Travelers to the original series, Gary Seven. Bonus points for a big chunk of the cast being middle-aged or older women, even if the writing for Raffi was, shall we say, lacking. Let's say that. Let's just leave it at that. But the problems, the editing. I'm glad you called out Rios's sudden cigar. I had to pause there and rewind to try to figure out where it had come from. It did not help. Plot confusion. Their ship's gone. Talon died soon after. Earlier, how did Soon get back so quickly from France to California? Later, how did he get back from California back to France? How on earth was an astronaut effectively running for her flight minutes before launch? How did a last-minute donor get that kind of access to an astronaut facility? Well, Brent Spiner just was an asshole.
Yeah,
he was just a massive asshole, and that got him through quarantine. Did the rocket just take off with whoever suit Talon stole without who? Oh my God. Yeah, they're missing somebody in the crew, right?
She's an alternate. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. That's also a good question. I would like to see how this whole crew, Seven with her Borg implants, going through airport security, none of them having any kind of paperwork or ID. How are they going to get back from the west coast of America to France. I don't know. Then it turns out that Jurati Borg's appearance has been to solve a sector endangering anomaly, and that we only hear about that in the last 10 minutes. And this anomaly is tiny in astronomical terms and is held back by a small fleet. Random solar flares have been far more powerful than that throughout Star Trek. This little pea shooter, which only seems to shoot in one direction, poses a sector-wide threat. Then they commit to J.J. Abrams' crime of making this tiny, remember, anomaly simultaneously visible in several different star systems. I know it's Star Trek, but acknowledging the speed of light isn't that hard. We've talked, like, what's this one-dimensional space anomaly shit? I know that, like, isn't it like the big black holes when they collapse in the equator? Don't they send out, like, a gamma burst shooting out the both poles of the spin axis?
Huh.
That,
I don't know.
So, like, it can happen that you get strangely directional phenomena, especially dangerous phenomena in space, but I didn't think they sold it very well.
Yeah, it was tough to imagine that that was a threat to a large portion of the galaxy or even a star system.
The thematic idea of teaching Picard that he doesn't need to take responsibility for everything, that he needs to be okay with people dying. Are you talking to Picard here? Is he callous about life? No, but he's ordered many people to their deaths and led others into near-death situations. The lesson he learned made little sense to me in terms of his character. Opening himself up to affection, yes, that I can see, even if it's retreading all good things. But learning not to take too much responsibility to avoid risking the lives of others, I just don't get it. I mean, yeah, there's also the whole Kobayashi Maru thing that every Starfleet officer goes through. Yeah, it's a mess. In the end, the Picard season 2 didn't work, but there are things I want to recommend and salvage. First, Michael Chabon, and it might be Chabon, I don't know. The CH always throws me in these things, is actually a brilliant author, and I have no idea what happened with the writing for Picard. The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, two Jewish cousins, one of them who escapes from Nazi Germany, pioneer the American superhero comics genre. A golem is involved, not Gollum. A golem. What's not to like? There's the Yiddish Policeman's Union, an alternate timeline, and instead of Israel, the area around Sitka, Alaska, becomes the new Jewish homeland. It's a murder mystery in that world. Also fantastic. I'd also like to recommend Lower Decks. It's great, and it just keeps on better.
When we get Paramount Plus, that's going to be one of the first things I check out.
I guess Q appears in the Lower Decks.
Oh, really? Is he voiced by John Lancey?
John DeLancey. Yeah, nice. According to this feedbacker. Final recommendation is Strange New Worlds. I've only seen one episode. It looks promising. I let out a cheer when I saw the red and the blue. That's right. They've got vials of red and blue in sick bay.
All right, I'm in.
I'm convinced that this was added at the last minute because someone on staff enjoyed your watch parties. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've never seen anyone call out the red and the blue, but it's there to be called out. So I wonder if it was it an old series thing, too, that they had kicking around on?
I don't know.
Shit, gonna have to have an excuse to watch three episodes of the old series, I guess. So thank you for that, Ian. I appreciate it. Moving on, two more left. Randy, after watching all 10 episodes of season 2, I think this would have made a pretty good two-part episode of TNG. This must have been the email that you saw you're talking about. All the extraneous action scenes and subplots that went nowhere could be jettisoned. Of course, they couldn't have had Seven, and with no need of Rafi, Rios, etc., with the regular cast involved. Perhaps they could have had a special guest star for Dr. Jurati, but that'd be about it. What do you guys think? That would have been better. And again, you still have a 10-episode season, but it needed to be, like, three mini-arcs.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you start, I don't know, you got a two-parter to start, a two-parter to end, and then two three-parters, something. But I don't trust these guys to do anything that's season-long. Finally, Josh B. says, to quote Star Trek Enterprise opening and title lyrics, it's been a long road getting from there to here.
Ugh.
Obviously, some of the best part of the season is Picard and Q. What I don't understand is why we got only four instances of them sharing the screen together. Add 3 to 4 times of them talking, maybe tie in some past themes and their TNG episodes, and then condense the episode to 5 episodes and call it a season. Q told us it didn't matter, and it turned out he was right.
For somebody who was ultimately concerned about Picard learning a lesson, giving him a gift, he was rather hands-off, I'd say. He was not in there managing Picard. much.
How much of this is budget? And oh God, I just realized that this is all still going to be whatever COVID restrictions affected season two are going to necessarily affect season three. I'm starting to really get a sinking suspicion that this cast there's no way they can afford all these people for 10 episodes. And there's no way they're going to get all these 60 and 70 year old people together breathing air.
Take from the effects budget and give it to LeVar Burton to show up. That's what they need. Slash it.
Honestly, just don't even film it. Just have him in a hermetically sealed room doing cast reads of the scripts that you've come up with. That's really all I want. Okay. Sure. Okay. I would pay to see a shitty webcam footage of that. Anyway, on season three, they announced several changes for the casting. No Jurati, Rios, Elnor, Soji. Sounds like Seven, Rafi, and Laris will probably be back. But it would make sense to be smaller roles of the entire TNG crew, right? I'm really starting to feel like this. I said it. I didn't think about this before I sat down to record this. I've said it, and my heart has been sinking this whole fucking feedback episode. I don't think it works on the COVID restrictions. I don't think it works on a budget, Terry, because this show is fucking cheap as hell.
Yeah.
There's no way we're going to have a sizable chunk of Picard with the entire cast. No fucking shot.
I mean, unless these people are just like, I don't need to make tons of money off this. I'll work for scale or whatever and get in there and just do it because they all want to get back together on screen again. Yeah, you're right.
I don't know. Do you think the TNG cast is like that, though? Because, I feel like they still want to get paid. You know, it's like not like they just show up to conventions all the time together. And
Yeah, but do they need, Marvel money to make this happen? Or do they just need enough to, be like, hey, if they paid me, I don't know. You wouldn't have to pay me too much to get together with a bunch of my friends and just hang out and film something, right? But I'm not a professional actor, so.
30 years ago, when they tried to get the Bald Move Network back together, Jim's going to hold. Nah, fuck. I need
double my rate.
That appearance fee is going to be steep. Their final thought is, during COVID, I saw pictures of the TNG crew still getting together at Patrick Stewart's house, so maybe they'll be more comfortable getting together again.
Just put a camera in that room. That's Picard season three. Done.
Yeah.
Them drinking wine together and laughing. Yeah. I'm in.
Yeah, we'll see in the trailers. We'll see how much the crew factors into the trailers
that's what you do, man. You just Photoshop in. You just put a camera in that room. They're all drinking Pinot Noir or whatever. You just slap a Chateau Picard digitally on there.
Sure. Yeah.
Call it season three, and I'm in.
Put a couple lens flares in Patrick Stewart's apartment. You won't even know. You won't even know.
De-age one of them a little bit. Sure.
And that's it. That is finally, we are done with season two of Captain Picard, Star Trek Picard. We'll be back next week, or not next week. Yeah, no. Right. We'll be back next year for Star Trek : Picard season three, the last disappointment. I don't know. Hopefully it'll be better. I'm hoping that Strange New Worlds is good. If so, I almost guarantee there'll be coverage of that on Off the Clock. Again, if you want to check that out, that's a premium podcast. You can get it at patreon.com/baldmove. But yeah, if that's honestly, at this point, I want to see the first episode and then I want to kind of see if it gets shitty. So I guarantee at least one of us will be talking a little bit about it. And I imagine you.
Yeah. Next time I just finished up Ozark. So my TV schedule is open back up. So I'm going to pick up the first episode of Strange New Worlds. We'll probably talk about it next OTC.
There you go. Well, We'll see if they can make a better one season three. At least we'll get one episode of our classic crew back together again. And it's going to be fun. Just in the same way Wesley was fun, Q was fun. It'll be fine. We'll be fine. We'll see you. And the other thing is, when do you think this will be out? Because they did film it back to back.
It could be sooner than a year. I would guess it's going to be sooner.
I imagine whenever they get done rotating through Strange New Worlds, Disco, Lower Decks, it might come out later this year or early next. You might get a late winter release on this. We'll see. Anything. Because I feel like Paramount Plus is going to want to keep Star Trek on the air to keep people subscribed. I have a feeling. Anyway, we'll be back next season. Until then, just watch out for them containment breaches. They'll get you. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.